Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Take Back the Night 2017. My name is Johnson Moser.
And my name is Katrina Poplett.
And we're co-leaders for the Take Back the Night Committee. And Take Back the Night is a national campaign that AMU has been participating in for over 20 years to raise awareness about sexual assault, violence, harassment, and dating violence and abuse. This year, we decided to focus on how sexual harassment is felt by different groups, or how looking at sexual harassment with an intersectional lens changes the perspective that we see. We wanted to hear from outside our community around us and how dating violence and abuse is manifested in spaces outside of dominant narrative. As we go through this week's events, there will be a focus on looking into our community to see how we can better support those who have experienced harm.
The content of this chapel is heavy, and for those who have previous experience with sexual harassment, it can be triggering. Please do what you need to do to be healthy. If you need to leave, please do so. Counseling services are here and ready to talk if needed as well. This service today is not meant to be a journey towards hope, not yet. I think in some occasions, we want to get through the hard parts of life, the witnessing and the grieving, and too soon, we rush to say, it'll be okay, or at least you have X, Y, and Z in your life right now. Sexual assault is experienced differently between all people, and for some can have ramifications that affect people for their entire lives. Today, we are creating a space to honor, recognize, and bear witness to the stories, experiences, and harms of sexual violations that occur in our society and in our community. This is an uncomfortable space to be in, but we invite you to hold the stories that we are going to hear into your heart as we lament violence and violations together. You may notice on stage that there are stones laid out across the front here. As you listen to the stories and the service proceeds, think about how many times the conversation around sexual violence seems to be stagnant or stuck in one place or blaming the same problems. The stones that we have laid out in front of us today are to represent the weight of these frustrations and conversations, but also to represent our own conversations and policies around Title IX and sexual violence here at EMU.
We gather together aware of the violence around us, the physical, sexual, and emotional abuse and neglect of children, including abuse by religious leaders, the murder and beating of women by their partners, the forced prostitution of young women in countries all over the world.
The sexual harassment of women in the workplace, including the church. The exploitation of women and children for profit and pornography. The rape of countless women within marriages and dating relationships.
The further violence perpetrated against women in the court system, ritual abuse and mutilation of women and children, the atrocities suffered by the victims of war.
In naming these forms of evil, we feel grief and pain.
I am going to be reading three poems, and after each poem, I'm going to allow for a moment of silence for us to just reflect on each story. What I Was Wearing by Mary Simmerling was this. From the top, a white t-shirt, cotton, short-sleeved and round at the neck. This was tucked into a jean skirt, also cotton, ending just above the knees and belted at the top. Underneath all this was a white cotton bra and white underpants, though probably not a set. On my feet, white tennis shoes, the kind one plays tennis in. And then finally, silver earrings and lip gloss. This is what I was wearing that day, that night, that 4th of July in 1987. You may be wondering why this matters or even how I remember every item in such detail. You see, I've been asked this question many times. It has been called to my mind many times, this question, this answer, these details. But my answer, much awaited, much anticipated, seems flat somehow, given the rest of the details of that night during which, at some point, I was raped. And I wonder, what answer, what details would give comfort, could give comfort to you, my questioners, seeking comfort where there is, alas, no comfort to be found? If only it were so simple, if only we could end rape by simply changing clothes. I remember also what he was wearing that night, even though it's true that no one has ever asked. A Survivor Triptych for Vera House. 1. An emergency call, 1966, before they changed the law. They stood, hands on their billy clubs, watching while he kicked her in the face and stomach, kicked until her teeth broke and her lips bled. They stood and watched and said nothing, then turned and left. Before that, they had spoken. "Ma'am," they asked her. Though she didn't know they meant her at first, she still thought of herself as a girl, as a child. "Ma'am, is this your husband?" He'd been slugging her then in the face, in the breasts, and he stopped to let her answer. "Yes," she had said. What else could she say but the truth, hard as it was? And they stood, their eyes wide and dark and somehow wounded, as if they were being beaten, as if it were their baby who might die from those kicks. "Ma'am," they said, voices cracking, "we can't help you." "What kind of law?" she started to ask before he mashed his knuckles into her face and she went down backwards. 2. She remembers Alice. The crazy way they tilted, the way they threatened to tip and spill her under his feet. She was fast, but he was faster, her head shrinking, doorways refusing to open, no refuge anywhere, not even women's restrooms a haven any longer. She remembers the knife he held over her while women in the next stalls trembled, the length of the thick blade, the way the thin light caught on the edge and brightened there. She remembers thorn bushes where she crawled, shredding her skin to escape him, or try. She never succeeded, not for long. His arms stretched through the city, ballooning with fists to find her, fists with eyes, feet with black wings. "Have you seen my wife?" he kept asking. Someone always pointed the way, and he just kept coming. 3. Red flags. She was afraid to come home from work, afraid as she walked from the bus, her steps slowing, afraid to open the door and go inside. The air in the house congealed, stiffened, and trapped her. It was full of thunder, lightning, dense with crackling anger and rage. She never knew how to reflect it. She tried to be nice. She tried to be good, but she couldn't be good enough. Niceness, he said, was a crime or plot, and it was her fault if the basketball team lost, or if his boss wanted him to go in early, or if his dog messed the floor. That dog mess was always her fault, even if she was at work and he was home. She made him angry by simply existing, by breathing his air. At the shelter, they spoke of red flags, of calling for help. But when he took her back, everything he said and did was red, and he ripped the phone from the wall. Blue Blanket by Andrea Gibson. Still, there are days when there is no way, not even a chance, that I dare for even a second glance at the reflection of my body in the mirror, and she knows why. Like I know why she only cries when she feels she's about to lose control. She knows how much control is worth, know how much a woman can lose when her power to move is taken away by a grip so thick with hate it could clip the wings of God. Send the next 8 generations of your blood shaking, and tonight something inside me is breaking. My heart beating so deep beneath the sheets of pain, I could give every tear she's crying a name, a year, and a face I'd forever erase if I could, just like she would, for you or me. But how free would any of us be if even a few forgot what too many women in this world cannot, and what the hell would you tell your daughter? Your someday daughter, when you have to hold her beautiful face to the beat-up face of this place that hasn't learned the meaning of stop! Stop! What would you tell your daughter of the womb raped empty, the eyes swollen shut, the gut too frightened to hold food? It was 7 minutes of the worst kind of hell. 7. And she stopped believing in heaven. Mistrust became her law. Fear her Bible, the only chance of survival. Don't trust any of them. Bolt the doors to your home. Iron gate the windows. Walk into the car alone. Get the key and the lock. Like, please, please, please open. Like already, she can feel the 5-fingered noose around her neck, 200 pounds of hate digging graves into the sacred soil of her flesh. Please, 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 please open. Already, she can hear the broken record of the defense. Answer the question. Answer the question. Answer the question, miss. Why am I on trial for this? Would you talk to your mother, your daughter, your sister like this? I am generations of mothers, daughters, sisters, our bodies, battlefields, war zones beneath the weapons of your brother's hands. Do you know they've found landmines in broken women's souls? Black holes in the parts of their hearts that once sang symphonies of creation as bright as the light on infinity's halo? She said, I remember how love used to glow like glitter on my skin before he made his way in. Now every touch feels like a sin that could crucify Medusa. Kaleoshan, Mary, bear me in a blue blanket so God doesn't know I'm a girl. Cut off my curls. I want peace when I'm dead. Her friend knocks at the door. It's been 3 weeks. Don't you think it's time you got out of bed? No. The ceiling fan still feeling like his breath. I think I just need a few more days of rest. Bruises on her knees from begging to forget. She's heard stories of Vietnam vets who can still feel the tingling of their amputated limbs. She's wondering how many women walking around this world still feel the tingling of their amputated wings, remembering what it was to fly, to sing. Tonight, she's not wondering what she would tell her daughter. She knows what she would tell her daughter. She'd ask her, what gods do you believe in? I'll build you a temple of mirrors so you can see them. Pick the brightest star you've ever wished on, and I'll show the light in you that made that wish come true. Tonight, she's not asking what you would tell her daughter. She's life deep in the hell, the slaughter, has already died 1,000 deaths with every unsteady breath, 1,000 graves in every pore of her flesh. And she knows the war is not over. She knows there's bleeding to come. Knows she's far from the only woman or girl trusting this world no more than the hands trust rusted barbed wire. She was whole before that night, believed in heaven before that night. And she knows she's not only one, knows she won't be the only one. Tonight, she's not asking what you're gonna tell your daughter. She's asking what you're going to teach your son.
these stories we have heard are not meant to leave you. Hold them. And know that behind each of these stories are thousands, even millions of more men, women, non-binary people who have experienced harm and violations. Today, we want to recognize our place as an institution. Our motto is Eastern Mennonite University, a Christian university like no other. Yet sexual violence, assault, and harassment occurs here. Dating violence occurs here on campus every single year.
In this way, EMU is like every other. We must recognize that for all of the work we do to live in a supportive and healthy community, we come up short in some places. We do not always support those who have experienced harm in the ways that they desperately need. As an institution, by definition, our system will fail those who are in it.
As Take Back the Night continues, let us make a commitment to each other and to our community to hold conversations and spaces for people to express their needs and experiences.
To lament the violence and the violations that have been experienced, to take time to do this, to lament and acknowledge that hope is not always visible when we are in the dark.
As you leave from the space today, we invite you to come up to the stage and take a stone. Let it represent a new commitment you make to yourself, or your friends, or your community. Carry it with you in the coming days or weeks, holding and lamenting the stories and experiences we have heard today and will hear in the future.
Part of the reason that we are ending chapel early today is because of the weight of these stories. We want you to take time to breathe and to also acknowledge what you are feeling and how those around us are feeling. We thank you for your presence and acknowledgement of the pain and uncomfortableness and struggle that is having this conversation, particularly here on campus and in our own community. Tonight, the conversation continues at 7 p.m. in a space that is meant for college men. We encourage you to come tonight. As you go from this place, music will be playing. When you feel led to come and grab a spoon, please do so. But for the rest of our time today, it is yours to breathe, to grieve, and to lament. Thank you for being here.